À en juger par la façon dont les marketeurs évaluent leur propre capacité à mettre en œuvre les outils de marketing automation, ceux-ci semblent avoir besoin de conseils avisés de la part d'une experte du domaine. Le marketing automation omnicanal apporte une valeur ajoutée sans égale aux distributeurs et entreprises du B2C, notamment en ce qui concerne l'alignement du marketing et des ventes. Même si ces technologies sont implantées depuis longtemps déjà, nous nous sommes demandé si les marketeurs les utilisaient à 100% de leurs possibilités. Pour répondre à cette question, nous avons analysé une enquête menée en 2021 par la société d'études marketing Ascent2 et surtout, nous avons demandé à Megan Hochstetler, Global Senior Product Marketing Manager chez MR6 de partager ses meilleures pratiques avec nos lecteurs.
Des interviews, des chiffres, des faits, des études. Pas de blabla, ce sont les podcasts de Visionary Marketing disponibles sur toutes les bonnes chaînes de Balado Diffusion.
Bonjour, vous êtes bien sur les podcasts de Visionary Marketing, le sujet du jour, Marketing Automation, conseils pratiques et leçons du terrain avec Megan Hochstetler, Global Senior Product Marketing Manager chez MR6, qui nous parle en direct d'Indianapolis. Cet article est le 6e d'une série de 7 réalisés par Visionary Marketing pour le compte d'MR6 dans un dossier intitulé « Comment planter ou au contraire réussir son marketing digital » et destiné à souligner les mauvaises et bonnes pratiques du marketing numérique. Vous retrouvez cette série sur vismktg.info/mktgdigital en minuscule. Ou encore dans l'onglet « Dossier » en haut de notre menu sur visionarymarketing.com. Le marketing automation est devenu un élément incontournable de l'alignement du marketing et des ventes, et la plupart des entreprises l'utilisent. Le rapport d'Ascent2 sur l'état de l'art du marketing automation est clair à ce sujet. La société de recherche en marketing a interrogé 300 professionnels du marketing en 2021 et elle a découvert qu'une écrasante majorité, 84%, des personnes interrogées pensaient que leur projet de marketing automation était, dans une certaine mesure, fructueux. Le diable est dans les détails, cependant, dans une certaine mesure, est une expression pleine de sous-entendus. En effet, en creusant un peu, on découvre une certaine marge d'amélioration dans la façon dont les entreprises utilisent le marketing automation, avec pas plus de 20% des répondants qui déclarent maîtriser correctement ces outils. Alors, qu'en est-il du marketing automation en 2022 et comment améliorer ses résultats ? Megan Hochstetler, Global Senior Product Marketing Manager chez MR6, a partagé ses secrets avec nous et nos lecteurs. Comme à notre habitude, ici, nous vous lisons la traduction en français et puis nous remettrons l'interview originale en anglais à la fin de ce podcast. À quoi sert le marketing automation ? Megan Hochstetler. En un mot, le marketing automation consiste à aider les marketeurs à mener plusieurs campagnes sur un ensemble de canaux en minimisant les interventions manuelles, ce qui leur permet de planifier les résultats de leur campagne à tout instant. En même temps, il aide à gérer certaines campagnes dites evergreen, c'est-à-dire qui vont se reproduire tout au long de l'année. Messages transactionnels, réinitialisation de mots de passe, email d'anniversaire, campagne de bienvenue pour un nouveau client. Le B2C est le principal point focal du marketing automation car les entreprises orientées vers le consommateur doivent faire face à une multitude de clients, de types de données, de règlements sur la confidentialité. De plus grands défis des marketeurs qui veulent tirer parti du marketing automation est celui de la donnée du consommateur. Celle-ci doit être fiable et exploitable et ce n'est pas aisé. Quels sont les principaux enseignements de vos mises en œuvre les plus réussies sur le terrain ? Le marketing automation a beaucoup évolué au cours des dernières années. Il y a une dizaine d'années, vous n'aviez besoin que de 2 points de contact pour transformer un prospect en client. Maintenant, vous devez gérer 6 points de contact en moyenne pour obtenir la même conversion. C'est un bouleversement de taille, nous dit-elle. Les marketeurs s'éloignent des envois de messages en masse et adoptent une approche omnicanale qui offre une expérience personnalisée, one-to-one, plus pertinente et contextuelle. Les marketeurs performants qui intègrent du contenu dynamique et personnalisé dans ces campagnes sont capables de doubler leur ROI, $41 pour chaque dollar dépensé dans une campagne d'emailing contre $21 pour chaque dollar dépensé dans des emails qui ne tirent pas parti de la personnalisation. Le défi le plus important et le plus courant dans ce domaine va être les données. Pour 27% des marketeurs, les données constituent le principal obstacle à l'introduction de la personnalisation dans leur campagne. Et ce n'est pas qu'il y ait un manque de données, nous dit Megan. Au contraire, il y en a pléthore. Ce qui importe, c'est la façon dont nous récoltons ces données et les utilisons de manière intelligente et rassurante. C'est une question de compréhension en profondeur de la donnée, pour savoir quelle portion de cette donnée peut mener à la conversion et pourrait être utilisée dans vos campagnes pour donner quelque chose en retour aux consommateurs. Par conséquent, faire passer les consommateurs en premier et comprendre quelles données vont établir la confiance avec eux sont les conditions préalables pour s'assurer qu'ils soient fidèles à votre marque. Et malgré cela, il existe encore des fournisseurs qui semblent ne pas être capables de reconnaître les clients qui sont fidèles à leur marque depuis 10 ans. D'abord, définir l'objectif de son projet de marketing automation. Marques prennent conscience désormais, nous dit Megan, des avantages à privilégier avec leur consentement les données de leurs clients. Données zero party et first party. À chaque mission de transformation digitale en accompagnement des responsables marketing, nous leur demandons de commencer par définir leur objectif, nous dit-elle. La première étape consiste donc à rapprocher cet objectif de l'objectif général de l'entreprise. Plusieurs possibilités existent, soit susciter un premier achat, ou réduire le taux d'attrition, churn, ou d'augmenter la proportion de clients premium et le chiffre qu'ils génèrent. Une fois que vous avez identifié ces objectifs, vous pouvez alors commencer à réfléchir aux stratégies nécessaires pour les atteindre. Il ne s'agit pas seulement d'avoir de bonnes données, mais aussi d'instaurer une dynamique de groupe et des priorités. Or, j'ai vu beaucoup d'équipes marketing sur le terrain, nous dit toujours Megan Hofstetler, à qui la dynamique de groupe fait défaut. Environ 55% des marketeurs déclarent consacrer leur temps à l'exécution des campagnes omnicanales. Mais d'un autre côté, 65% des marketeurs disent consacrer beaucoup de temps à la mesure et au reporting. En conclusion, nous dit-elle, on peut en déduire que les équipes qui s'y prennent bien préservent un bon équilibre entre l'exécution, la mesure et le reporting. Pour en revenir à la partie d'objectifs, il existe de nombreuses mises en œuvre du marketing automation qui se contentent de regarder les données d'engagement ou les taux d'ouverture. Mais si vous n'avez pas un objectif clair en tête et des stratégies pour l'atteindre, comment peut-on comprendre ce qui marche ou non, nous dit Megan. Dans ce genre de situation, on finit par passer la totalité de son temps dans l'exécution des campagnes. On envoie des mailings en masse, comme les campagnes d'anniversaire et de bienvenue, sans optimisation. Surtout, on ne crée pas ainsi de tactique permettant de s'adapter aux nouvelles situations. Les marketeurs qui ne mesurent pas et n'examinent pas constamment leurs données ne peuvent pas réussir, nous dit-elle. Il faut donc offrir une expérience unique pour chacun grâce au marketing automation. C'est encore une affaire de données, poursuit Megan. Permettez-moi d'éclaircir ce point à l'aide d'un exemple concret. Puma, la grande marque de vêtements de sport, présente dans plusieurs pays et commerçant dans plusieurs langues, essayait d'élargir sa base de données. Ces équipes de marketing se sont efforcées de développer la base de données avec des données bien nettoyées, collectées avec le consentement du consommateur en lui offrant un bénéfice. En outre, elles voulaient disposer d'une vue complète du client au travers de cette base de données. L'objectif était donc de combler le fossé entre leurs différents systèmes. En segmentant leur audience et en se concentrant sur les publics les plus réactifs sur les contenus de la marque, Puma a augmenté sa base de données de plus de 50% et a fait croître ses revenus de 25% en 6 mois. Ils disposaient de données collectées en ligne et en magasin, il s'agissait d'identifier qui est le client, quel que soit le canal. Lorsque Puma a été en mesure d'identifier qui étaient ses clients à travers chaque point de contact digital, ils ont pu identifier les segments les plus intéressants. Il s'agissait ensuite de consacrer du temps et des efforts à ces campagnes pour ces segments les plus réactifs et de ne pas dépenser des ressources sur les segments moins investis avec le même rythme que ce qu'ils faisaient auparavant. Cela correspond à un changement de philosophie énorme. Cela consiste à segmenter son audience et à envoyer du contenu pertinent propre à chaque segment aux différentes étapes du cycle de vie du client. En conséquence, leur base de données a augmenté de plus de 50% en 6 mois. Leur objectif était d'améliorer leurs résultats commerciaux et ils ont justement fait croître leur chiffre d'affaires de 25% en 6 mois. Voilà la preuve que données et résultats commerciaux vont de pair. Parlons du consentement du consommateur maintenant. Megan nous dit « Vous devez effectivement demander le consentement des consommateurs. Il existe de nombreuses réglementations Donc, une grande partie de ce que les marketeurs doivent faire pour développer leur base de données est ce qu'on appelle la qualification progressive, ou en anglais « progressive profiling ». Il existe de multiples canaux que les professionnels du marketing intègrent dans leur boîte à outils, le courrier électronique, les canaux web, les SMS, les applications de chat et les notifications push. Il s'agit d'autant de points de contact différents sur lesquels le public peut décider de s'inscrire et de recevoir des communications de la part de la marque. Les marketeurs sont ainsi en mesure d'utiliser les canaux préférés des clients pour, le cas échéant, les sensibiliser ensuite à d'autres canaux. Le programme de fidélité est un excellent exemple. Si vous pouvez utiliser vos canaux existants pour lesquels vous avez des opt-in, introduisez un programme de fidélité par exemple pour pouvoir les amener sur un autre canal où ils ne sont pas encore abonnés. Il s'agira de dresser le profil des clients pour comprendre leurs besoins et la variation de leurs préférences de canaux au fil du temps. Le marketing de la permission est-il un moteur ou un frein ? Mégane. Un moteur assurément. Cela donne aux marketeurs l'occasion de prendre le point de vue du consommateur, de se mettre à sa place. Certes, l'accumulation de réglementations sur les données ne simplifie pas la tâche des marketeurs. Mais à long terme, cela vous fournit une occasion de nettoyer vos données et vous garantit également que le temps que vous consacrez à vos campagnes se concentre sur les personnes qui souhaitent réellement recevoir des informations et agir sur les contenus de votre marque. Quels sont les freins organisationnels au déploiement du marketing automation ? Megan Hochstetler. Parmi les freins organisationnels au déploiement du marketing automation, on compte en premier l'absence d'un responsable de l'expérience client. Il y a encore des marques qui n'ont pas pourvu ce poste en interne. Dans ce cas, je pense qu'il s'agit d'un obstacle majeur qui empêche de fournir des expériences individualisées et pertinentes. La mission de ce responsable de l'expérience client est cruciale, car elle se fonde sur la satisfaction client, quel que soit le canal. Ce rôle ne peut réussir que s'il n'est pas attaché à un canal en particulier. Il faut faire en sorte, nous dit Megan Hochstetler, que les équipes responsables de chaque canal travaillent ensemble dans le but ultime de satisfaire le client. Dans les grandes organisations, nous dit-elle, une approche cloisonnée du travail peut constituer un obstacle également. Il faut ensuite s'assurer que les données sont conservées dans une infrastructure stable. De cette façon, la mise en place des campagnes est beaucoup plus souple. J'ai lu que 58% des outils MarTech en général sont utilisés à leur plein potentiel, et cela reste vrai depuis 2019, nous dit Megan. Cela m'indique donc que les plateformes MarTech sont parfois un peu en avance sur les marketeurs. Par précaution, il convient donc d'apprendre à utiliser correctement quelques-unes des fonctionnalités de ces plateformes avant d'aller plus avant. Comment mesurer et optimiser ces campagnes de marketing automation ? Megan Hochstetler. Le bon côté de ces campagnes est le nombre incroyable de données que vous récoltez. Si vous partez de ces informations exploitables, vous pouvez facilement optimiser vos campagnes en mode test and learn. Il est préférable de commencer par deux ou trois objectifs et d'exécuter des campagnes de marketing automatisées sur ces objectifs spécifiques qui vous permettent non seulement de tester et d'apprendre, mais aussi de valider si ces stratégies fonctionnent. À un stade ultérieur, vous verrez bien si un investissement plus important est nécessaire ou si une extension de l'usage de cette plateforme à d'autres départements de votre entreprise est indiquée. En fin de compte, cela mettra également en évidence l'impact de votre travail sur le résultat global de l'entreprise. Le marketing automation permet de récolter des masses de données. N'oubliez pas de les exploiter, nous rappelle Megan Hochstetler. Mais ne vous concentrez pas uniquement sur les bonnes métriques. Regardez également les tactiques qui ne donnent pas de bons résultats, nous dit-elle. Et peut-être même les campagnes qui ont échoué. Après tout, si vous n'analysez pas les campagnes qui échouent, comment allez-vous apprendre ? Il s'agit d'identifier les marges de progrès ainsi que les opportunités d'augmentation de chiffre d'affaires, aujourd'hui et dans le futur. Ne vous concentrez donc pas uniquement sur les bonnes métriques. Les marketeurs sont en mode rattrapage sur un bon nombre d'innovations, nous dit Megan. Je pense que l'avenir pour beaucoup de professionnels du domaine, c'est l'expérience omnicanal. Les distributeurs qui disposent de magasins physiques observent que les clients passent moins de temps dans leur point de vente et se tournent davantage vers le digital. Il faut donc rendre ces expériences en magasin exceptionnelles. C'est pourquoi de nombreuses marques, comme les marques de loisirs et de divertissement par exemple, misent tout sur cette expérience client. Les conseils de Megan s'avéreront précieux pour les marketeurs qui sont à la peine dans la mise en œuvre de leur projet de marketing automation. L'enquête Ascend2 que nous avons déjà mentionnée dans cet article apporte un éclairage supplémentaire sur les obstacles qui empêchent les marketeurs de déployer avec succès ce type de plateforme. Comme vous pouvez le voir dans le schéma que je vous fournis dans le billet qui s'appelle Barriers to Proper Utilization of Tools, donc les barrières à l'utilisation optimale des outils de marketing automation par les marketeurs, ces obstacles sont multiples. Comme toujours avec les projets MarTech, ils sont résultat d'un mélange de problèmes commerciaux et techniques. Le marketing automation est une technologie incroyablement puissante, mais elle exige beaucoup de connaissances techniques et commerciales, ainsi que beaucoup de temps et d'efforts consacrés à sa mise au point. Ce n'est pas une surprise pour nos lecteurs. Pour que l'automatisation fonctionne, il faut avoir beaucoup de fer au feu. Au-delà de la qualité des bases de données, qui est essentielle comme l'a expliqué Megan, citons le contenu, les profils, la segmentation, les analytics, les scénarios, les messages, la personnalisation, etc. Mettre en œuvre le marketing automation, c'est un peu comme conduire une Formule 1. Elle est forcément beaucoup plus puissante que votre Renault Clio, mais elle nécessite aussi beaucoup plus de préparatifs. Une équipe de tuning de premier ordre, son entretien sera plus coûteux. Et il vous faudra peut-être passer quelques dizaines de milliers de kilomètres à tourner sur le circuit Paul Ricard avant de la maîtriser, si vous y arrivez un jour. Sans compter que vous devrez éviter de pulvériser la voiture dans un quelconque accident. Cela dit, aucune voiture à moteur ordinaire n'aidera quiconque à être à la hauteur de Louis et de ses amis. Et c'est pourquoi l'investissement en vaut la peine. Et je vous laisse maintenant en compagnie de Megan Hochstetler avec le podcast original en anglais.
So I'm here with Megan Hochstetler. Hi Megan, you're talking from Indianapolis and you're senior product marketing manager with Emarsys. And we're going to talk about marketing automation.
It's my favorite topic.
Absolutely, absolutely. What is the main purpose exactly of a marketing automation tool and what can we expect from its implementation?
I think I've seen marketing automation have a thousand different definitions, a lot of buzzwords in there. But if I were to just narrow it down, really what it's doing is helping marketers to just run multiple campaigns across multiple channels with less hands-on execution. So do more with less. And I mean, a lot of the times marketers have a calendar of some sort, right? To be able to map out where their campaigns are going to land in each time of the year. But they're also doing evergreen campaigns that are going to be continuous throughout the year. Things like transactional messages, things like password resets, or also things like birthday emails that are going to be happening all throughout the year, welcome campaigns to welcome a new customer to your brand. So it's really about scaling your efforts across each of these types of campaigns that are going to be throughout the year for a marketer.
Okay, that's very clear. Now, these marketing automation platforms, are they for every kind of client or are they rather for B2C or B2B or is there a preferred kind of customer?
B2C is the biggest marketing automation, but there's also a B2B use case. They're kind of different worlds. My background and kind of sweet spot is more on the B2C angle of it, messaging to consumers. But if you think about the B2B side of the house, they also need automation. And a lot of what they're dealing with is understanding who their leads are that are coming in. When are they hot? They kind of term it as a hot leads at a more of an account-based level versus an individual consumer level. So they kind of have different definitions of it, but it's the same concept, right? But different markets. But I would say B2C is probably the biggest piece because they have a big challenge because they're dealing with so many different customers and they're dealing with data regulations, privacy laws that are coming in place. And the biggest piece that I see tough for marketers who are pulling together marketing automation is getting that data piece right for those consumers and bringing that data in a way that's actionable.
Yeah. And God knows there are issues with data privacy laws at the moment, mostly in Europe. Okay, so what are the lessons you may have learned from the most successful implementations that you've witnessed in the field?
Yeah, and I think marketing automation has evolved a lot even the last few years. But if you think about 10, 15 years ago, you only needed two touch points to be able to get someone to, you know, come in to your brand and make a purchase or whatever the goal of your campaign is. But now you have six touch points is the average that you need to do in order to get that conversion. So it's totally a shift, and marketers are moving away from batch and blast type of messages and creating this more omni-channel approach that has this contextual, relevant one-on-one experience with, that was a lot of buzzwords, but those experiences that mean something to a customer. And when they do this right, the successful marketers who are implementing these campaigns, they're seeing a 41 to, they see $41 for every $1 spent on an email campaign that has dynamic content in it versus $21 to every dollar spent on emails that rarely deploy dynamic content. So it's two times increase in ROI by pulling in this more personalized approach that a lot of marketers have evolved into their marketing automation program. So we're seeing a huge shift to just rethinking what marketing automation means, right?
It means being able to get in touch with these customers through all these different channels, and that's it, certainly a challenge, isn't it?
Sure is. Do you want me to share a challenge?
Yes, that would be a good idea.
So I think you know, I've been in this space for a little under a decade now, and everyone has their unique challenges, right? You know, they have certain industry challenges. But I would say the biggest one that, again, is the most common is going to be data. I saw a stat recently that said 27% of marketers say that data is the key obstacle to bringing a personalization into their campaigns. And so where I think that comes into play is not that they have a lack of data. There's a ton of data out there. It's kind of too much, a little scary. What I typically talk about is there's a way to bring data in and use it in a clever, not creepy way. I like to do the clever way. And a lot of that is, again, in the way you ingest that data to understand what data is actually actionable for you to use in your campaigns. It's going to give something back to the consumer. So putting that consumer first, understanding what data is going to build trust with them, and bringing back their business to be a loyal customer at the end of the day.
Anytime I talk to a vendor, it's, as a consumer, I mean, it seems like they never know what my address is, even though I haven't moved for 17 years. And they always seem to ignore my telephone number. How come? How come is it possible nowadays, 2022?
Yeah. And we see a lot of brands making these transformations. A digital transformation is another big buzzword, but it's the fact that brands are realizing the benefits of getting your data right up front. So whenever we talk to marketers who are getting started in their digital transformation, we have them start to map out a goal. So the customers or the marketers who are doing this right are starting with a goal that is tied in some way, shape, or form to the overarching business objective. So that's step one. And goals could be a number of things. It could be driving a first purchase, reducing churn. Maybe it's very specific of increasing premium customer footprint and the revenue that they are bringing. So it can be a number of different goals. But once you have those identified, then you can start to think through what are those tactics or strategies to get me to where I can. To where I can complete those goals. So I would say get a goal first, then understand what data you need to support those goals and those strategies. So that's where I see the most successful marketing teams start off with.
Okay, crystal clear. Now we know a little bit more about the most successful implementations. What about the least successful ones? I mean, those that actually really got awry. Have you seen some really awful things in the field, I'm sure?
Yeah, you know, I'm not going to call anybody out by name, but no, I think something, again, common that I think could resonate with a lot of people listening. It's not only getting your data right, but it's about team dynamics and priorities. Like I've seen a lot of teams that don't have the right team dynamics in place to operationalize this digital transformation. So what I mean by that, there's about 55% of marketers that say their time goes into execution across channels. So that's a big important piece of their job. But on the other side, 65% of marketers say that they spend a significant time on measuring and reporting. So the teams that are doing it right are having that balance between execution and measuring and reporting. So again, back to that goal piece, there's so many marketing automation programs that are just looking at engagement data or just looking at open rates. But if they don't have that goal in mind with those strategies in place, it's hard for them to understand, are they moving the needle? And they may just end up spending their whole time in execution mode, just keeping batch and blast emails like birthday and welcome campaigns in flight, but not optimizing to create tactics that are at that given time and place going to move the needle. Because as you know, things change all the time. We know found this out in the last 2 years, right? So the marketers who aren't constantly measuring and looking at the data that they do have is where they fail.
Right. Point well taken. How can marketing automation enable brands to deliver a consistent experience for each individual customer?
Yeah, I mean, not to go back to data again, but it is such a big component. I think it's worth speaking to this point on. A great example, just to put it in the lens of a real life retailer, for example. So Puma, big sportswear brand, they are across multiple countries, multiple languages that they're dealing with. And they were really just trying to, one, grow their database. So again, a lot of marketing teams struggle to grow their database with clean data that is collected in a consensual way that's giving a benefit back to the consumer. So they wanted to grow their database. And two, they wanted to have that complete view of the customer with that database, right? So what they did was really focus on bridging the gap between their different systems. So they had data both online, so their web data, their digital channels, and their offline systems. So maybe that's their storefronts. And they wanted to make sure that they identified who that person is, no matter where they are engaging with the customer, right? So when they were able to identify who these customers were across every digital touch point, they could then identify who those highly engaged segments are, right? And spend their time and effort on those campaigns for those highly engaged segments and not spend money and time and energy on those less engaged segments as often as they previously may have been. So that's a huge mental shift of segmenting your audience and sending relevant content based on different segments and different stages of their customer life cycle. And so they grew their database with Amarsys with over 50% in just 6 months. And then they ultimately increased their revenue. So back to that goal, ultimately we want to improve business outcomes, revenue being a big factor. They ultimately increased revenue by 25%, I believe, in email and web in just 6 months. So again, tying, that's why data and the business metrics are so hand in hand.
Yeah, it's very impressive. Do you have to ask permission to do this? Because you're in essence tracking people across different channels, are you? So do you have to ask permission before you do this?
Yeah, so there's tons of regulations out there, right? And so a lot of what marketers need to do to grow their database is they call it progressive profiling. So when you have these multiple channels that typically marketers are starting to bring into their portfolio, so whether it's your email, your web channels, as some people are getting into SMS or even chat apps like WeChat and Line and Facebook Messenger or mobile apps for push notifications, things like that. All of these are different touch points to be able to identify where you like to opt in, where you like to get your communications, and use those channels that they are opted into to introduce them to maybe other channels or other ways for them to get involved. A loyalty promotion or loyalty program is a great example. So if you can use your existing channels that you do have opt-ins for, introduce these things like a loyalty program to be able to bring them in to a different channel that you may not have had them in before. So definitely an opt-in. It's definitely going to be a progressive profiling over time to understand how you can understand their needs and what channels they like to engage on over time.
And as a professional implementer of this kind of systems, do you see permission marketing as a driver or an inhibitor in these kind of projects?
You know, I think it's a driver because, yes, it's going to these rules and regulations prohibit you from doing certain things, right? But I think it's on purpose. It's from the lens of the putting yourself in the consumer lens. We're all consumers. If I give my data away, I want it to be used in a way that is beneficial for me. So I think all of these regulations, yes, they do make it harder for a marketer, but it helps in the long run for you to have more clean data anyways, so that you are spending your time on campaigns that actually are speaking to people who want to communicate with you.
Exactly. But I see and hear a lot of marketeers refraining from asking permission because they're afraid that a lot of people are going to turn them down. So what is the rate of acceptance from consumers whenever you ask them permission to do marketing with them?
Well, I think it depends on what channel. So there are some channels that are harder to opt out of than others. So for example, SMS, very easy to opt out of that channel. You literally just have to hit stop. So that channel is definitely one that needs a little bit more of a strategy if you're going to implement SMS. So when you start to build that, and it's more expensive. So those types of channels, yes, a lot more.
And it's very intrusive as well. So this is one of the reasons why people want to opt out as well.
Okay. Exactly. So if you are just blasting them with a message that's not relevant to them and they aren't good deals or they aren't meaningful to the consumer, they're going to opt out. So a very high opt out rate in SMS if you don't do it right and have that personalized piece. However, like web channel is a great example of how you can collect information. So there are tools out there that where you have your browsing history on your web pages, that information can be used. So once you identify yourself as a user, so you set up an account with a brand on a website, for instance, that can then be used to create a very contextually relevant experience for you. So as you're going to the search bar and searching for shoe brands, we may know that you like this particular product affinity, so we will show those types of products in the search bar up front. So there's a lot of ways to optimize things like your website to try to keep the customer engaged for as long as possible using the information that you do have. A customer previously might have been anonymous data that you could have pulled in now that they are a known customer.
Okay, so we've seen how you deliver a consistent experience for each individual customer and what you have to do this. What are the inhibitors, technical or organizational, that are preventing brands from implementing marketing automation properly?
Well, data, obviously. But I think from the organizational perspective is another key player. So over the years, we've started to see this new role evolve. I'm sure you've seen it, like the customer experience role. And so if there are still brands that don't have this role, so I would say that's a big inhibitor or a thing that's holding brands back from creating these sophisticated, very relevant one-to-one experiences. And the reason why this is such an important role is because they're channel agnostic. So if this role is only going to succeed if they don't have like a number tied to a specific channel. So they have the end goal of the customer in mind the entire time to essentially quarterback each of these channel teams to be talking to each other. So, for example, I had a marketer that was at a large company. They dealt with 13 different brands, so very global company, a lot going on. And so she was a digital marketer, had been in the space for a long time, and she hadn't seen this company she worked for start to bridge the gap between other departments, right? So she just started to raise her hand and join the services team, all hands calls or their team calls on a monthly basis, just to start to identify maybe some pain points that they're having that her digital marketing team could possibly implement. And what she found was there was a little bit of overlap to where we can bring that in. So that just was the beginning of how they can evolve a customer experience role that spans across multiple departments, multiple channels, to have that holistic view.
Yeah, and that's not always very easy in large companies, is it? I mean, I've run into this problem myself when I was on the other side of the fence, and it's not always allowed to touch the customer database when some people are sitting on it and they sort of own it because they are from a different department or a different part of the business, a different business unit. And it's not always easy to break down the silos, as they say.
And that's another big buzzword, breaking down the silos. But and I think in the end of the day, as much as you can get your data in an infrastructure that sets you up to not be able to not have to change it a lot. So if you have that up front and have less reliance on, let's say, an IT or another department that you don't control, if you have that data in a way that's set up to be able to be more flexible and agile in the way that you go to market with your campaigns, can take a little bit of that load off. And you make a very valid point. And I think it's a lot of marketers sometimes can't do the cool, flashy campaigns that they want to do because they have that holding them back. And I've seen a stat that said 58% of MarTech tools in general, like not even a specific one, like in general, are 58% of these MarTech tools are being used to their full potential. And that's been flat since 2019. So that tells me that MarTech platforms are sometimes innovating a little bit ahead of where marketers want to be, and because they're held back by some of those pieces. So as much as these tools can help you to hold that data in a way that's easy to adjust and easy to build new sophisticated campaigns from, will hopefully remove some of those pain points. But that is a huge pain we've seen.
That's a fascinating insight you have here. And maybe some of these platforms, I mean, once again, all of them included, have so much functionality in them that maybe it's a good idea to just use some of the functionality well rather than try to do it all and badly because you're, for some organizational reasons, you can't or you're not allowed to.
Exactly.
Okay. Good. Fascinating. How can you help brands easily measure and optimize the results of their campaigns with marketing automation?
Yeah, and I think the biggest thing here, well, marketing automation at its core, right? The beauty of it is that as you're running these campaigns, you're going to get a lot of information back. So if you are able to take this information and make that actionable, that is the key to optimizing your campaigns and testing and learning them. So what we just talked about earlier, if marketers can not let data be a preventer of getting something out the door, to just get a couple done. So like a lot of brands that I see, just get a couple of those goals. So we talked about goals at the beginning. Just start with two or three. You don't have, we understand you have a lot of goals. Everyone does. But if you start off with your 2 to 3 goals you want to do. Run some automated marketing campaigns on these specific goals. That just gets you in the door to not only test and learn, but you're proving to the business that this is working or not. And that something needs, that we either need more investment or we need more buy-in from other teams potentially. So the more that you start to run, the more you'll understand. And as much as you can tie that to that business objective I talked about earlier, that's going to make you look better as a marketer, maybe some job promotion, but also show that you're impacting the overarching business. So I would say, one, you're going to get a ton of stuff. Make sure you're looking at it. But two, this is something that happens a lot, is sometimes marketers only focus on the good metrics. Mm-hmm. I'm guilty of that too. But sometimes we have to be, put our big girl pants on and show that there are maybe some areas that are not doing so hot and not performing well, or maybe campaigns that have failed. But if you don't have these campaigns that fail, how are you going to learn from it? So it's about identifying the gaps as well as the opportunities for increased revenue, both current and future opportunities down the road. So I would say those are kind of the biggest pieces that I that I see.
I like this idea of picking up a few goals and not try to achieve too many at the same time. It's a step-by-step approach. It's very pragmatic. I'd like to wrap up this interview because I see you have a lot of experience in that field. So what is your vision of marketing automation? It's been around for a little bit more than 10 years now, and it's suddenly maturing quite a lot. And so this is evolving as well. So where do you see it heading in the future?
I see there's a ton, like I said, there's a ton of innovation out there where a lot of marketers are playing catch up. But the marketers who are taking advantage of this innovation, we're already starting to see some really, really cool things, and that's only going to continue. So great example is just identifying the difference between multi-channel campaigns and omni-channel campaigns. I think at the future and where people are looking to get is this omni-channel experience, but sometimes they're stuck in this multi-channel piece. So multi-channel would mean, let's say I see an ad for this cute dress and I purchase it. It's amazing. And maybe a day or two later, I get a push notification or an email that's asking me to purchase the same dress I just bought. So that's disconnected experience. So good job to the marketer for being cross-channel in a different multi-channel experience. Great. But that next future investment in area that I think will be really, really cool once we get there is having that contextual experience built in to maybe give me recommendations on shoes that were fit with the dress, and being able to connect your purchase data, your loyalty status data, your intent data, your browsing behavior, like all of these different data points that can help brands be able to predict where I want to go without predicting ahead of me where I want to go. I may not even know I want to go there, but maybe I do want to get new shoes. Maybe my old ones do not do it justice for this dress. So I would say omni-channel is huge. And then I think from like a retail perspective or anyone who has an offline experience, so like a storefront, this has evolved to where as customers spend less time in stores and moving more to this online presence, right? We want to maximize everything we can out of those experiences in store. So, you know, a lot of brands out there, like entertainment brands, for example, are trying to get people to come into their experience. But usually it's for, let's say, a birthday or a celebration. How could they continue to bring them back in creative ways beyond once a year on their birthday? So it's kind of cool to see some of these companies and these marketing teams creating cool ideas like half birthdays or being very contextual in the retention tactics to bring people into to be a loyal consumer. So I think the world of loyalty, the world of retention is a huge piece of the puzzle that I think hasn't been completely tackled yet by the vast amount of marketers. But I hope that we get there because more of these companies are going to come up with more and more products, and more things are going to be coming at us, and we can make a bazillion decisions. And how are we going to make sure that we have brands that are benefiting both us from a values perspective as well as from a product perspective? So future omnichannel, we're getting there, starting with a lot of cross-channel experiences, but I think we want to get to that omnichannel place.
Fantastic. Thank you very much, Megan.
Surtout, n'oubliez pas de mettre une bonne note à ce podcast si vous l'avez apprécié.